Brigadier Daniel, Real 11. You'd just partially broken through the German lines when you became aware of a flank guard on your right.
Completely broken through. Completely broken through. When I heard a bang and nothing happened. I heard another bang and my car stopped and I couldn't open the door, so I climbed over the top. I found all four wheels had been blown off. Then I looked up on the side and there was a fuse, thank God. A very nice sergeant who'd been at Oxford 4 months before said, well, now you have to come in here and I'll give you a cup of tea.
A German sergeant?
Yes. And he had about 50 men with him, and two AEs and two machine guns, or three machine guns. And he said, you have to come here, and I'll give you a cup of tea, and I'll send you in a vehicle down to where they're collecting the prisoners. And I said, well, I am not going to surrender to you. Thank you for offering me tea. I can do without that. Well, he said, you're all in English, perfectly like you and I talking. What do you intend to do? I said, I'm going to rejoin my forces, British force. He said, do you know how far away they are? And I said, yes, I do. And he said, do you really think that you can walk all that distance, 60 miles, without one drop of water? For I personally will see that you do not get one drop of water. I do not understand why you will not surrender. You may belong to a regiment whose officers never surrender, but in this case, if you don't, you will die. And I think you're a fool. And he turned away, and he came down very dull. And I walked away.
Why didn't he just take you prisoner? I mean, you
he
don't...
He didn't take me. He said one of his men, why did you walk down and take this idiot prisoner? Because he admired what I did. And you came across Germans like that who were human beings. So I walked off. And I walked for 4 days and four nights. But I didn't have a drop of water, and that is how that marvelous time when I came back from that elephant made me realize that I could do it, and because I'd never drunk any water since. Always just a cup of tea and come see there.
So what do you remember of those 4 days and nights? Well, any instance, or how did you survive?
I'll tell you exactly. The last morning, it was just dawn, and I was halfway up a slanting sand dune. And on the other side of the sand dune, I saw the little flag that we always carried, our commanders, on the the rod that has
the aerial wire, yeah.
Going along the other side of this sand dune. And I saw he was going to miss me. I was lying down. I was finished. One officer of this tank wanted to urinate. So they stopped the tank and he got out. And while he was urinating, he thought he might as well walk up the top of the bridge and come across the other side. And he walked straight on to me. He picked me up and helped me back into the tank, and I found it was the Duke of Westminster's, whom I knew very well.
What about the previous 4 days, though? I mean, do you remember anything about
nothing,
that walk?
Nothing.
It's just a blur.
Just a blur.
Did you suffer a lot from thirst during the day, or were you able to cope because of
I
your...
Neither.
You don't remember it?
I don't remember a single thing from the time I turned around and walked away until the time I was lying on the sand, watching this aimless little thing going away.
Now, I believe you just wanted to go back a bit. I believe you helped a fair bit with the wounded while you were at the Cauldron Battle.
Carried a lot of wounded to the makeshift casualty carrying station in the cauldron itself, and thereby got covered with blood, which at a later state might well have caused my destruction. That's all.
Right. Now, what about your debriefing? What do you recall of that? Who did you debrief with after the battle?
Debriefing.
Who did you report to?
I was unconscious.
When you came to, though?
General, it's on that piece of paper that he's just written.
Herbert Lumsden,
commanding the 1st Armoured Division. The Duke of Westminster took me to him in his tank, and I reported on what had occurred.
And
the following day I saw General Orkney, who had come forward to the Brook with a minimum number of staff and told him what had happened. He offered me to take over the command of Tobruk and to be promoted in so doing, and I was too tired and refused.
Now, we'll move away now, and we're jumping through the rest of your career to the end of the war. You want to make it clear that you've got most of this recorded in your autobiography and don't want to repeat it. Now, but one thing that we're particularly interested in is more detail about when you first went into Belsen. Could you...
Yes, I'm going to tell you now. General Montgomery, is that on? Is that thing on?
Yes.
General Montgomery was determined to break out of the bridgehead at the earliest possible moment. After some heavy fighting, he ordered Brigadier Roscoe Harvey to proceed at speed northwards towards the Seine. Brigadier Harvey ordered Colonel Daniel to take his regiment, to lead with his regiment and proceed northwards at top speed.
Now, what was your regiment at the time?
The regiment was the 13th Horsetry Regiment. Yeomanry. What's a yeomanry here?
It's all right, we'll look it up.
Honourable
Artillery Command.
Yes, Honourable Artillery Company.
Right, so you've been ordered to lead. What happened then?
But none of them knew of the very dangerous piece of country known as the Bocage. Lay in front of Colonel Daniel's troops. Like Cornwall, it has very narrow roads and very high banks with trees and bushes growing on them. These very narrow roads cause the tanks to get entangled one with each other, and they were brought to a standstill, where they were attacked with bravery and vigour by the Panzer Grenadiers. Most of the fighting took place on the backs of the tanks. German grenadiers were well trained for hand-to-hand fighting. The tank personnel were not. Now, the tank personnel were very well trained in what they were required to do, which was look after the tanks, drive them, and use the wireless continually as required. We lost a large number of casualties, some 2,000 in 2 hours, and their loss was a very serious matter for the regiment. Although the numbers were made up, the skills were not. Finally, I collected as many men as I could from the tanks near me and set them all to clearing the huge bank on my left away so that I could drive my tank into the adjoining field. I drove at full speed up to the top of the column, and I found it had reached a small station in which there was a cattle train of 28 trucks, all sealed, with the exception of the last three, which were covered by tarpaulins, as they had no roofs. The train was hitched onto an engine by one couple and was in the act of being driven away. I drove up my tank at top speed to the engine driver. He was a Frenchman, a nice, brave Frenchman. We both understood each other, as we could both speak the same language. I told him his train was not to move. He told me he was ordered to take his train to Belsen. Now, that was the first time that I'd ever heard of Belsen, and I knew that that train was full of living Jews. I forbade him again to move the train. He replied that he was going to adhere to his orders, that if I didn't clear my tank out of the way, he would smash it up to pieces with his engine.
You were actually on the track then?
Across the track. I very reluctantly shot him, and he fell out of his cab. The fireman ran away, and all the loafers ran away. I rounded up the loafers again and made them unhook the engine completely. The fireman came back, got into the engine, which he was very fond, and drove it back into its shed and locked the door. I was delighted. The train was mine to do what I liked with. I walked down it and I shot the lock off every single truck, every single cattle truck. I threw the doors open and saw that the inside was full of well-dressed men and women and children. But they were so tightly packed and so frozen with terror and fear that they were utterly unable to move. I tried to get them out and pull them out and push them out, but I failed. So that I shouted for the help from a younger lot of young Frenchmen who were in the train, got them out, and told them to enter the train completely and send everybody down to the village to go back to their own homes.
So these, the Jews on the train, they were French Jews, were
French
they?
French Jews.
And did you get any help from the men in your tank on the track or from the column of tanks that were behind you?
they had moved on.
So you were just on your own with the train?
I was entirely on my own in the station.
Now, let's move on now to when you actually went to Belsen. Could you sketch in the story before that? Sorry about this.
Several months later, on a lovely morning in May, Brigadier Harvey and I at his small headquarters were advancing along a country road when we were told to halt and receive instructions from Army headquarters. The instructions that we got were to say that the German High Command had asked for a 48-hour ceasefire. The British headquarters had refused this. Then the divisional commander came on the line to say that the local German headquarters had told him that the in front of the area in front of which we were about to cross was full of poison gas canisters. Now this was a fact. I saw the canisters myself. Thousands and thousands of them, sealed canisters.
Do you know what type of gas?
Of course I don't know. None of them opened it. Poison gas. Some sort. the divisional, my divisional commander then got in contact with me again to say that the Germans had said that there was typhus rife in the area and I should be careful of it and make my men wear gas masks.
Now you saw a German officer running. Could you tell me that part?
Yes. I made my crew put on their gas masks. There was a gas mask for each member of the crew, but mine was missing. Undoubtedly, some member of the crew who was less brave than the others had got it. I wasn't interested because I didn't believe anything about the typhus. Then, curiously enough, a very large, fat, and disheveled German major came running down the road. Now, this was unusual. His hat was off and his coat was flapping open. Now, every German officer I'd come across so far was always immaculately dressed. He stopped and spoke to Brigadier Harvey, who understood not a word he said, and pointed his revolver at him and told him to run back down the road. He came to me, and I did the same. I didn't understand a word that he said and signaled him to go back and keep running down the road.
That was the last you heard of him?
That's the last I heard of him. In a very short time, we came to a gate where and a clump of half a dozen houses, and in front of the gate was a little armed guard of very inferior soldiers, inferiorly dressed soldiers, that were formed up in front of the gate. And I noticed on a railway siding within sight of me three cattle trucks with tarpaulins thrown over the back, as they had no roof. And I realized for a certainty we had reached a extermination camp.
And this was in fact Belsen?
And it was in fact Belsen.
Could you describe the gate?
The gate was made of wood, an ordinary farm gate. I drove straight through it, smashing it to pieces, and I drove my tank straight through the wall of the nearest house, which happened to be the headquarters office. The gun knocked the inhabitant to the ground. I walked in after it, And I thought what a very unpleasing sight he was. He was not shaved. He was large and fat. And I afterwards found out that his name was von Kramer.
So he was in the building when you ran your tank in through?
Yeah. He was sorting out records, and he went on doing that until I showed him at the point of my Luger that he was to get out and stand up against the wall and stay there till I told him to move.
Now, what could you see as you looked around the camp?
Nothing except a few other houses, half a dozen other houses, and a lot of Hitler youth running about, and a few girls with them, and one or two elderly guards.
Now, what other buildings were there? Because there were three.
They were well-built. Well-built little cottages.
But what other buildings were there? What about the camp buildings?
There was nothing else in sight.
What about the aircraft hangar-style things you saw?
Well, they were further out. They were down the slope. And from where I was, I couldn't see them.
Right.
I set off down the slope towards three hangars that I saw about 300, 400 yards away.
Now, what about this ditch you saw full of... When did you see that?
As I left my tank, I noticed. I told my troops to sit down and have their breakfast. But as they pointed out, the tank was... half on the edge of a ditch, a dug ditch, at least 150 yards long. How deep they didn't know, but it was full of naked corpses. Now, some of the corpses had been there for some time, and the gases from those at the bottom filtered through the corpses for allowing an arm to rise up, or a leg, or in some cases a whole body rose up. This so terrified the tank personnel that they refused to get out of the tank to eat their breakfast, and so I posted two sentries right on outside the tank and told them to shoot any German who arrived, who came in sight carrying an offensive weapon.
Now, at this stage, you hadn't shot at anybody yourself.
No.
Now, were the bodies lying about on the floor of the compound, or were they just in this ditch?
No, in the trench.
So, where was this trench near the commandant's hut?
Well, it was about 20 yards away, yes.
And what about the smell? Was there a prevailing smell as you approached the camp, or when you got in the camp, or when you got near the ditch?
Well, there was a prevailing smell all round.
Could you describe it? It's difficult to describe a smell, but...
There was a very unpleasant odour from the time I crashed through the gate the entire time I was in the area. It was a smell that I'd never smelled before and was, of course, the smell of decaying human flesh.
So, now, what did you do next then? You left your tank with the two guards and the crew in the tank.
In the tank, because they were too stupid and... to eat their breakfast, and I had no time to mess about.
What about the rest of your tanks or your unit?
They'd gone on with Brigadier Harvey.
So what did you do? You got out of your tank.
I got out of my tank, and I went into the lock off the door of a house that I'd seen a German unlock, go in, stay a few minutes, come back, and lock up again. I threw the doors open. I found it was a hospital. It had rows of ladder beds. The occupants of the bottom lot of beds were dead, and they had died chiefly from suffocation of the humus and urine that had soaked through from the top bed. It was not a pleasant sight. I had never in my life imagined anything so atrocious. I closed the doors again.
Were many of them alive?
I don't know. I didn't investigate.
There was nothing you could do. How many
were? Nothing one person could possibly do.
How many were there in there about?
I wouldn't know, but I would think there were about 150.
And you say they died from humus. What do you mean? And they
yeah.
Excrement.
Excrement. And soaked through the mattresses. For the one that was still alive on the top.
How did you feel when you saw that?
I disliked it very much, but I was prepared to be appalled by whatever I saw, and indeed I was. But I had very little time, and I had to get on. And I walked down the grass sward to the first hut. I blew open the lot with my revolver, threw the doors open. Inside I found a lot of mouldy straw with about 200 completely naked male men and women and children. I threw the doors open so that we could get out if they wanted to. They were so thin and so emaciated, I didn't think that any of them would move. But they did in time. I did the same in the next hut. And in the third hut, as I opened the door, I found five children sitting on a body of a woman who'd been dead for at least a week, playing this well-known children's game with bits of straw as to whichever child could pull out the longest piece. Now, in the last hangar, I was in a hurry and I botched shooting the lock off. And half of it got stuck. Whilst I was trying to extricate this, I felt that someone was behind me. I swung round, and there I found an extremely well-dressed German woman in army uniform with an Alsatian tied to her waist by a lead. She was holding a revolver which was sticking into my back. I yelled at her, and she disappeared.
Could she have shot you? Why didn't she shoot you?
Yeah, why not?
You don't know?
I don't know. Otherwise I'd be dead. How could I tell?
Where did she disappear to?
I'm telling you, she disappeared. There was no sign of her when I got the lock free. She was quick-witted, and what she had done, as I opened the door, she stepped behind it.
Now, you think this was...
This, I know now, was a woman called Irma Greese.
How do you know it was her?
Because she was the only woman dressed in uniform.
Could you describe her features at all, or
no,
did you not...
No, I thought she was tall and thin, and...
What colour hair, or could you not say?
Dark hair. Well dressed in German uniform. She was obviously one of the personnel of the establishment. I heard afterwards that she had used her dog to chase children, and if the dog was hungry, she had no objection to it eating any child that she killed. Now, all this time, I heard a popping going on. I knew that was a revolver shooting.